I'm going to set my phone up here so I don't talk too long. I've been around a while, so I have a lot, and so I want to stay on task. Okay. My name is Anita DeDuca. My Serenity anniversary is August of 1986. My home group is Listen and Learn, Wednesday nights in Hartville, Ohio, just outside of Akron. I want to thank the group for asking me to speak. It's a big deal, 24 years. That's awesome. That's a big deal. Thank you very much. Throughout this talk, you'll hear me say higher power, which I choose to call God, a.k.a. Jesus Christ. My alcoholic is my husband. And I want to say this because you're going to hear my lean, because I have to talk a little bit about where I was. And it's going to sound like I'm throwing him under the bus. And I am not. I'm not. You know, he's a good guy. He's different now that he's sober. It's different. And so I just, you know, it's just the truth. Please forgive me in advance as I may cuss. You know, you come into this program and you have to clean up, and the mouth is just a thing. I can talk pretty rough. I'm crusty, as some have said. But everything that I share with you this day is I've learned from various Al-Anons or AA members. I will read, too, because I will get off, and I can go the long way around the barn, and we don't want to be here all night. So I will read. But I can't take credit from the stuff that, you know, the wonderful information that I've got. This is what members have shared with me, and it's information that I could apply to my life, and I hope that you can do the same. In the past, church told me to be good. Church was really good about telling me what would happen to me if I wasn't good. However, church didn't tell me how to be good. Al-Anon has told me how to be good, and the members have shown me how to be good. Therefore, there's been a change in me. I'm going to share with you what my life was before Al-Anon and what I had to do in Al-Anon to get where I am today. Before Al-Anon, I had a rather typical childhood. I didn't realize that my grandfather was an alcoholic. I just knew that he was a lovable person, and he always smelled like Stroh's and Lucky Strikes. We never saw him falling down drunk, but he would drink a fifth of Jim Beam every day. So I'm thinking, probably an alcoholic. But the family never talked about it because it was like the dirty little secret. My parents were not happy with my choice of a spouse, but I married him anyway. He was my high school sweetheart. We met when I was 14. And starting way back, there were signs. Back in high school, there were signs. Big ones. I ignored him because I loved him. He was 2 years younger than me, and he asked me for $200 to get his car repaired that he had wrecked when he was out with the guys. That might be a sign. Then there was the time that he and a friend stole a beer truck. Not only did they steal the truck, but they took it to his garage, unloaded it, and took it back to the store. That might be a sign. But I married him anyway. Marriage went okay for the first few months, and then, you know, the honeymoon's over, and I started to notice things. Things like drinking to excess, drugging to excess. Everything was to excess. I want to mention this because it's easy to recognize drug abuse because it's illegal, but alcoholism is perfectly legal. He definitely had an alcoholic vehicle. At one time, he even had a car that started with a screwdriver. I'm not even sure if that's legal, but it was loud and smoky, you know, the kind that when you start it up, and it's smoking, and we called it a Rambler. I don't think he ever had a metal bumper because he'd always ran into someone, and so it was a 2x4, and 2x4s were cheap, But there you go. There's another sign. When my husband came home from work, he was only carrying a six-pack, so I couldn't figure out how he got so drunk. What I found out later is that he actually purchased 2 six-packs, and he had drunk one on the way home from work. So the drinking had taken over. My evenings were pretty predictable. They would start out with me pacing the floor, wringing my wrists, waiting for him to come home, all the time worried that he'd wreck the car and kill someone. And then when he didn't come home, it would advance to stage 2 of me being pissed off that he hadn't come home, and I'd hope he'd get into a wreck and kill himself. And then it would advance to stage 3 with the headlights coming up the driveway, and I'd jump into bed like I'd been sleeping all night, except that we had a waterbed, and I would just be moving around. But I was raised with the old adage of, if you were a good wife, and a lot of you Al-Anons I know, especially the ones that are like my age, will get that. If you were a good wife, you could just fill in the blanks. If you were a good wife, you would cover for them. If you were a good wife, you'd make sure the alcoholic was comfortable. He kept his job. Call him off work because he had the flu. Dead of summer and he has the flu. My husband is a lot bigger than me. He's a big man. He's 16 inches taller than me. When he passed out drunk, it was my job to make sure that he was comfortable, so I needed to get him in bed. After all, a good wife does this. But who, in their right mind, wants to put a pissy, pukey drunk in their bed? Me. I'm going to try. And it was just awful. It was awful. But I can tell you today that I'm not that sweet little lady that's in our Courage to Change book that talks about when her alcoholic would pass out, she'd cover him with a blanket and keep him warm and comfortable. No, it wasn't me. I'd let him lay on the floor, and then every time I had to step over him, I'd kick him. He never woke up, but he'd be covered in bruises in the morning. I mean, not real bad. I didn't break any ribs or anything, but he's hurting. Alcoholism turned me into a monster. My alcoholic was like a drill sergeant. He would get like 2 inches from my face and scream at me for everything. Many times I was so scared I didn't dare take a breath for fear that he might knock me into next week. You could feel his breath and the spittle as he kept screaming and screaming at me. It was my fault if it rained. But many nights I'd lock myself and my infant son in the bathroom just waiting for him to pass out. I perpetually agonized for everything. I just wanted him to be happy and to be nice. I couldn't tell anyone what was really going on. It was embarrassing. I thought I must be a failure as a wife if I couldn't get him to stop drinking. I was always taught that if I didn't do the right things, God would punish me, and I had to look at that. Well, I married someone my folks didn't approve of. I ran with a rough crowd, and even though I didn't anymore, I had participated in a lot of the illegal activity and the drinking, so therefore I must be getting punished by God. One afternoon, we were arguing about, you guessed it, his drinking, and by this time he'd become very aggressive. Our son was about 9 months old in his high chair, and he was eating the Cheerios that I put on the tray. My husband had said he was going to the cellar. I'm sorry, this is difficult. My husband said he was going into the cellar to clean his gun, and I was so scared. I followed him into the cellar, and he was just sitting there with the gun. I think he was going to commit suicide, and I just started praying. I don't know even know what I said. You know, it's one of those deals where you kind of turn into Charlie Brown's teacher. I don't even know what I said. I just remember praying and praying. I went up the stairs, leaving him down there, and just thinking, if that gun goes off, our son will be so frightened. And I don't know, will you recover from that? Thank God it never went off. But I knew something had to change. He needed to stop drinking. I collected phone numbers for treatment centers for him to call, and I took our son and the dog, and I went hiking to clear my head. When I returned home, he had called one of the facilities and went into treatment the next day. During his stay there, the counselor, it was the best 28 days of my life. It was so nice. I needed a break. It was just all too stressful. During his stay there, a counselor had asked to meet with me, and she wrote on a piece of paper that I was to attend 6 Al-Anon meetings before I came back. And I thought this was like a required thing, you know, but I gave it a try, and what do you know, I liked it. These were my people. And he got sober. I'd heard about conferences, because now he's sober, and I'd heard about conferences, and I wanted to go, but I didn't have a roommate. So I sent him my money, and I asked them to put me with someone, and they did. Her name was Jeanette. She was from Pennsylvania, and we got along really good. We exchanged phone numbers and kept in touch. Jeanette and I were roommates at other conferences in the future. Sometimes we would talk in bed at night until you could hear the birds singing, and figured we probably should go to bed. But she had cautioned me about becoming complacent and reminding me that pink clouds can go gray. But I encourage anybody, if you've never been to a conference and want to go, and even if you can't get a roommate, send your money in, tell them to put you with someone. You just might find your Jeanette. It's very good. It's worth it. He did get sober, and he stayed sober for 2 years. I knew I couldn't go back to that lifestyle, so I just told him, because it was true, that I wasn't sure what I wanted to do, but I couldn't go back to the way it was before. I wanted my alcoholic gone. Not just gone, because I didn't want him to come back and bug me. I wanted him dead and gone. But I didn't want to get caught. I needed to collect the insurance money. I felt I deserved it because I was suffering a lot. I used to do things to try and speed up the process. You know those slipper socks where there's a little leather bottom and then the sock is like knitted on the top? He had those. And I would put pledge on the leather part. Hoping he'd slip and fall down the stairs and die. I did that. If he and the guys were going to go fishing, now we all know what happens when you're going fishing, that cooler's going to come out of the cellar. Well, I would run down to that cellar and I would string a 300-pound fishing line across those steps, hoping he would catch it and fall down the basement steps. That'd be good, too. But then one of my Al-Anon friends said, oh, you better stop. You're going to end up hurting him, and then you're going to have to take care of him forever. And I was like, oh, God help me. So I quit doing that. He's very lucky that if I found Al-Anon, he's very lucky. I'm sure I would have eventually killed him. Actually, on my way down here, and we passed the exit that talks about Marysville Penitentiary. Oh, Lord. And I joke with the girls because I could be there. I could easily be there. What I would encourage anybody is keep going to meetings. Go to meetings, go to meetings, go to meetings. Get phone numbers, talk. Listen to the message and not necessarily the messenger. And I say this because I remember going to a meeting and we were all sitting around in a circle. And this girl came and she had this giant satchel that she kept on her shoulder. And she was one of those people who would come into a meeting, not just a big gulp drink, but one of those big ones that I swear would hold a gallon of something. Anyway, she would dive down in this satchel and pull out nail polish remover. And she took her nail polish off. And then she'd set that aside, and then she'd dive back in there and get nail polish and change her nail color. And I'm just like, this is so distracting. She couldn't possibly be hearing a flippin' thing, is what I'm thinking. And then she gets them done, and then she takes the color off again and decides to change the color again. And I'm like, She hasn't heard a thing. But when it came to her turn to speak, she would blow me out of the water. The whole time, she's just one of those who could multitask really well. Anyway, she's what we call a double winner. She's an AA and LNN. And she and I are still very good friends today. But she was my first lesson in listen to the message and not necessarily the messenger, because you have no idea in what form it may arrive. I can tell you that I empathize with those who do not have sobriety in the home. It is a lot harder to work the program if the other person is not willing, but it's not impossible. But it is tough. For those people, I can't recommend enough the use of a sponsor. If you don't have one, you need to get one. If you don't like the one you've got, you need to get a new one. A sponsor is, to me, I believe, a person who is put into our life to guide us along the way. To be a good sponsor, I need to be a good friend. What is shared member to member is held in confidence, absolutely is. A sponsor is a friend, a trusted confidant, to whom I'm mutually drawn as a companion and ally, whose love for me is not dependent on my performance, and whose influence draws me closer to God. In Al-Anon, they tell us, get a sponsor. 30 years ago, there were a few things you did to get better. You got a sponsor. You did what your sponsor told you to do, and a sponsor would tell you if you were not doing it right. Some sponsees are like ducks to water, but I sure have had my share of chickens, too. Some come and don't stick around, or they just don't. They don't want to put the work into it. It is work. Service. I've done a lot of things in service over the years. My first act of service was cleaning the ashtrays at the meeting. Funny thing is, it was at the hospital. That's when you could smoke in a hospital. I've made the coffee. I've set out the literature. I've served as GR and DR. I've also had an opportunity to see what happens on the state level. I tell everybody that they have a gift. Everybody has a gift. You may not know what it is yet, but you will. My gift is organizing conferences, and that's what I do now. If you happen to see the Fall into Serenity Conference, yeah, that's one of my babies. I love it. I love being able to spread the word. That is my gift. You may have heard the term, when I got busy, I got better. Well, that's true to a point. I am saddened when I see people get involved in service too soon. Many times when people get involved in service too soon, they start focusing on the task at hand, and they forget to focus on themselves. It's so easy to get distracted by service that our own character defects continue, and many times they can manifest themselves, and you never address those. You don't clean up your act. Just because someone has years in Al-Anon doesn't make them an authority. Yes, hopefully they have their shit somewhat together, but not always. All of us, including myself, can have a slip or even a wipeout. Sometimes I've caught myself looking for loopholes. If I'm looking for a loophole, typically I'm looking to justify a wrong or to be deceptive. For me, a loophole is a lie. I need to rein it in right quick. My case in point is traditions in the World Service Manual are suggestions. Al-Anon, and perhaps even its survival, are dependent on adherence to these principles. I don't know how much clearer it can be made. Still, I've been in meetings where individuals will vote against the traditions or the World Service Manual simply because they are suggestions. Yes, traditions are suggestions. However, keep in mind, a parachute is suggested when you jump out of a plane. Prayer. Let me get ready to turn this page. A relationship with a higher power is so important. I've always been told that God was going to punish me, so when my life was falling apart, I was not about to ask God for help. I figured he's already punishing me for all the bad choices I'd made, so I certainly didn't want any more of his help. I was running as fast as I could away from God. But I can say he never gave up on me. My relationship with my higher power is so deep today that it really didn't exist prior to Al-Anon. He existed, but there was no relationship. As I look back over my life, I see where he was there for me, even though I did not acknowledge him. The transformation that has taken place in me has been nothing short of a miracle. I am a miracle. I found my higher power, whom I choose to call God. Actually, he started out as my gut feeling. You know, trust your gut, when in fact it's really trust your God. Over the years, my ability to listen to the voice of God has surprised even me. Usually it's a gut feeling that he tells me in the shower, and I'm not sure why it's there unless he realizes I can't run away. Sometimes it's actually audible, and it spooks even me because I've actually answered him. One of the times that this happened, I had found out that my husband was having an affair. He knew that I knew, and it was getting really volatile. I thought, well, this is probably it. If we need to sell the house, we'll have to keep the yard looking good, so I mowed it. The whole time I was mowing, I felt this need to get moving, to finish this up and get out. But I wanted to finish the mowing, and I did, and it looked great. I went into the house, got a quick shower, because I was going to go stay with a friend. I still felt this urge to hurry. I didn't even dry my hair. I got dressed, and I was in the mudroom putting on some sandals, and I was having trouble buckling them. And suddenly I heard a voice telling me, pick them up and get out. I responded by yelling, okay, okay. I grabbed my shoes, and I got into the car, which was in the garage. I started the car, I locked the door, and I opened the garage door, and there he was coming at my car. I was terrified. Had I not obeyed, who knows where this may have gone. I don't know. He was pounding on my window, and I just kept it in reverse to end, go, 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 go. I prayed to my higher power that he not take my husband or son from this earth until they know him. Not just know about him, but to know him in their heart. My higher power assured me absolutely that he would wait because he knows how much it means to me. I believe he answered that prayer, and I feel so confident about the answer that I don't even worry about it anymore. I also believe that my husband and son are probably going to be hanging out a long time. But that's all right. I used to pray like I was wishing on a star. I know now that my higher power loves me and he's listening. If it's truly my heart's desire and if it's good for me, he will grant my request. So for me, it's important to pray like it's a done deal. I try to thank him before it's even happened. When we mail a letter, we expect it will get there. Prayers are the same. So I have this little envelope here. And so when I say, Dear God, that's the address. It's me again, that's the return address. I put all the crap in the envelope, that's all my little requests or Thanksgiving. And I seal it. And that's when I say, In your name I pray, I seal it. And then I put the postage stamp on it, and that's my amen. And I send it off, and I don't pick it up again. I let it go at that point. Many times, I'm trying to always seek God's will, and I will ask him, Are you sure? Are you sure? Because it's usually not something I want to do. Or if I'm pretty sure, I'll keep going, and I'll tell him either bless it or block it. You know, if I'm going along, I'm going to keep going until he closes the door or blocks it in some way. I'm just going to keep going. Sometimes he whispers, and I need to be listening, so I can't let myself get too busy. I need to sit still and listen to him. If I'm struggling to accept something, I tend to talk about it a lot. And God love my Al-Anon friends, because I will talk and talk and talk and talk and talk about it. And it's yucky, but by saying it and hearing it, I eventually come to accept it. It's usually because I'm working through the acceptance process for me. If I cry a lot while I'm talking about it, It's usually because I already know what action I need to take and I'm just not okay with it yet. Today I know that God doesn't give me what I can handle, but he helps me handle what I've been given. Today, my husband is finally sober and has remained ever since. But that's his story. My sponsor has told me a long time ago that I'm to keep my hands off of his program. It's none of my business. I like to describe the two of us as being like a tree. He branches out this way, I branch out that way, and we have the trunk that we're a couple, but otherwise we have very, very separate programs. The husband and I have endured most of the things that we talk about in our book, The Alcoholic Marriage: financial issues, health issues, legal issues. The list goes on and on. I've had my fill of cops at the house and worse. I'm done. Honestly, when I say I'm done, no one ever wants to hear me say that because this girl's done. I can say with sobriety, it is good. Guys, stick with it. It's good. Sobriety is very good. I can tell you today that I love that man and I don't want him to die. I want him to live a long, long time. He makes me crazy a lot of the time, but I suppose I do that to him too. I recognize that I could hit a meeting every night of the week, but for me, that's not really working the program. It's easy to work a program if all you do is hang out with program people. It's safe. I can't pass something on to someone who already has it. To see if I'm really getting it, I just need to spend some time with family. Earth people. Ugh. You know, just remember, Jesus ate with the sinners. So it's good. I'm a firm believer that each and every person has their turn in the barrel. That would be the barrel of shit. We have all been in the barrel. We will probably experience another round in the barrel again. That's called life. God has groomed us and made us all stronger, of stronger character. It's so important to come out of the barrel a better person, a stronger person for it. My worst day in Al-Anon is still better than my best day before Al-Anon. I have a lot of friends and family who have never experienced hardships in their lives. Because everybody will have their turn in the barrel, it's important for me to be there for them and show them that they can get through this. We are all wounded healers. God comforts us not to make us comfortable, but to make us comforters. Ever notice how everything having to deal with alcoholism is loud? I realized this after talking to a friend of mine. She had said she didn't like how loud something was, and it dawned on me that everything about alcoholism is loud. The behavior is loud, arguments are loud, slamming of doors is loud, all of it. To this day, I do not like to go to a restaurant with loud music that I have to holler over. I like things pretty quiet. Alcoholism bleeds into everything. It's like when you accidentally get a red sock into your wash load of whites. You end up with pink underwear. No one really wants pink underwear. It just happens when the red bleeds into the whites. But the wash load can be saved if you take your time and add bleach at every rewash, sort of like adding program to all the aspects of your life. I started to get better when I stopped comparing myself to you and started identifying with you. When I stopped saying, I'm going to Al-Anon meetings, and started saying, I've joined Al-Anon. I am an Al-Anon member. There's a page in our book, From Survival to Recovery, page 267, I believe it is. And it's, I'll just read it. The following excerpt reveals special gifts that one may enjoy if she or he is willing to surrender to the spiritual discipline of the 12 steps. 1, we will become mature, responsible individuals with a great capacity for joy, fulfillment, and wonder. 2, though we may never be perfect, continued spiritual progress will reveal to us our enormous potential. 3, we will discover that we are both worthy of love and loving. We will love others without losing ourselves, and we will learn to accept love in return. 4. Our sight, once clouded and confused, will clear, and we will be able to perceive reality and recognize truth. 5. Courage and fellowship will replace fear. 6. We will be able to risk failure to develop new hidden talents. 7. Our lives, no matter how battered and degraded, will yield hope to share with others. 8. We will begin to feel and come to know the vastness of our emotions, but we will not be slaves to them. 9. Our secrets will no longer bind us in shame. 10. As we gain ability to forgive ourselves, our families, and the world, our choices will expand. 11. With dignity, we will stand for ourselves, but not against our fellows. 12. Serenity and peace will have meaning for us as we allow our lives and the lives of others to flow day by day with God's ease, balance, and grace. No longer terrified, we will discover we are free to delight in life's paradox, mystery, and awe. We will laugh more, and fear will be replaced by faith. Gratitude will come naturally as we realize that our higher power is doing for us what we cannot do for ourselves. And I can say that's my checklist. And I can check, check, check. I want to thank everybody today. I hope I shared something that might be of help. I'm a firm believer if you can go to a meeting and just take one thing and apply it to your life, you're on your way. Thank you very much.